Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Love, you've got the power, but you just
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is our Empowerment Hour. Today, the latest on health and healing and living a longer life. We're going to show you what red onions do that's good for you. We're also going to talk about, do you have brain fog? How about brain fatigue? What can reverse that? I'll share that with you. Also, the Bill Gates Foundation is funding surveillance of anyone opposed to vaccines. Well, I guess I go to the top of that list. And how about aloe vera? Have you been using it? Good thing. I'll explain why. And trying a little tenderness, and your brain will know. And I'll explain that. My guest in about 20 minutes now will be Dr. David Lewis. Dr. Lewis is an internationally recognized research microbiologist and a former senior researcher for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. He is the only EPA scientist to have published first authored research articles in Nature, Lancet, and Nature Medicine. Among his better known scientific discoveries is the use of DNA fingerprinting to study the effects of climate change on the breakdown of pesticides by bacteria. The standardization of heat sterilization of dental equipment worldwide and the dangers of sewage sludge as it's used on farmland as a fertilizer. And it was that latter research with sewer sludge that was leading to death-related incidents of sewage agriculture, and he was removed from the agency, and he became a whistleblower. He's now a senior science advisor for the National Whistleblower Center in Washington, D.C., and a member of its board, and we're going to talk to him today about what happens when you tell the truth about the dangers of anything. In this case, it's about vaccine. What happened to Dr. Walker Smith and Dr. Andrew Wakefield? We'll get into that. And I'll report from an article that he wrote, how the case against the MMR vaccine was fixed. So we'll show you what happens when big agra, or big medicine, big pharma, join together, hire PR firms, hire lobbyists, put on black op operations, use mainstream media, and nail anybody to a cross that takes away their profits or challenges their prestige. So that you won't want to miss. I'm asking my engineer once again, we are back into static in my headset, please. This is coming from the station, if you would have a look and see how we can correct it. Let us now go to the latest on health and healing. Try a little tenderness. That's the latest thing from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. How would you respond if someone told you that you have a very dedicated son and that he got the scholarship he wished, or that the company you work for made great profits and that you were going to get a salary raise, and you were appreciative because you were part of that? Affiliative experiences, they all connect. And what we now know is positive affiliation experiences make a difference. This is published in the Journal of Neuroscience, and it can make a difference in how our brain responds. And it has been known for some time that mammals sustain social bonds by showing affiliative behavior, which promotes group cohesion and cooperation among members. Previous studies done in animals have pointed to specific regions in the brain involved in these behaviors. In humans, the challenge has been to show how this experience modulates brain activity and to distinguish these experiences. There's a paper. It's entitled The Neural Signature of Affiliative Emotion in the Human Brain Areas, published, and so here's what it means in lay language. Let's say that you're around parents and siblings and people who see that you've done something good, and they acknowledge that. You know, job well done. Maybe it's a coach you know, who's encouraging you to improve yourself, to keep your focus, and you do, and then gives you some positive feedback. You're kind to someone. You do something that maybe others didn't expect, and they acknowledge it. Every time you get some kind of positive feedback in your life, this records itself in your brain. And now we're seeing that the more you get that encouragement, the more likely you are to be positive and to always be watchful, mindful of what you say and what you do and how it impacts other people. In effect, it sensitizes you. I remember once something really, really simple. We were all going out to go for a summer swim. I lived in West Virginia on the banks of the Ohio River in Parkersburg, and about 40 miles out, there was a lake in Ohio that a lot of people went to. So everybody decided, let's go swimming. It's a hot summer day, fine. We were teenagers, and we got in the car, and there wasn't enough room for one of the guys. And everybody was going to drive off. And I said, hold on a second. So I got out of the car, and I said, you all go on. We'll get over there some other way. And this guy named Steve Shadan, he says, why didn't you go swimming? I said, well, I looked at you, and you look kind of sad that you weren't able to join us. He says, well, it's all right. Now, he's the kind of guy that wouldn't say anything, but I knew nobody likes to be rejected. Nobody likes to be left out. And I was happy spending the afternoon, you know, just hanging with him. He was a friend. But what bothered me was the lack of sensitivity that anyone else would have saw that if you weren't the one selected or you weren't the one able to join them, that it didn't matter. It does. Most people don't make a big deal out of it, but it's recorded in the brain. So all those little gestures, all those little kind things you do, all those little kind things you say to people, all the little thoughtfulness issues of life, all that is recorded in your brain. And then you're more likely to do the same thing again. Now, why is this important? Because look at how many people today lack that. Look at how many people come to work, mainly younger people, and they don't care about the quality of their work. They don't. I'm a small business owner. Yes, I'm a journalist, a filmmaker, an author, investigative reporter, a nutritionist, dietitian, clinician, scientist. I wear all these hats. But I'm able to do an awful lot of the stuff I do for free, including counseling people for free, doing this radio show for free, and Pacifica Station for 35 years, because I'm able to maintain a little business. When you're in business, you learn a lot. You have to, because if you don't, you pay for all your mistakes, and some of them can be very painful, put you out of business. What I'm finding today, as compared to 10 or 20, 30 years ago, is a lot of people come to work today. They don't care about the quality of the work they do. They don't care. And yet they still expect to be paid. They expect to come in when they want to come in, go when they want to go, spend time doing their own social private media on your time and your dime. And if you say anything to them, it's like, hey, dude, what's the problem? And then you think, well, growing up, didn't you have a problem? And that was addressed with a lack of civility, a lack of manners, a lack of care. And then no. And then you start thinking, wow, what if we all acted that way? How selfish of a nation would we be? We wouldn't care about each other. We wouldn't care about anyone who was suffering. We wouldn't care about discrepancies and the social issues. And we just wouldn't care about anything except ourselves. One big selfish group of people. And how sustainable would that be? So when they do a study that finally proves something that we've all known for a long time, feels a lot better being around nice people than not nice people, positive people rather than negative people, optimistic people rather than fatalistic people, people who get out there and can do even when they're challenged by issues, physical or financial, still willing to do their best, versus the people who just whine and complain about everything. And yet we've all seen this throughout our lives. Now they're verifying it. Yeah, it's in the brain. Unfortunately, and I'm sad to say, we have some technical problems at PFW. We're going to do our best to correct them, and we're going to take a little music break now, come back, continue with health and nutrition, go to our guest, and try to correct the static problem. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. So we'll go back to our program. Now, next up, we should all be eating a lot more fruits and vegetables. But there's new information, brand new science, published in Stroke, the Journal of the American Heart Association journal, that shows that white fruits and vegetables may lower our stroke risk. Let me quote this. It says, apples, of course, have a reputation for keeping the doctor away, and now research finds that both apples and pears keep strokes away. Okay, my question is, how do they do that? Well, a Dutch study published in the peer-reviewed journal Stroke found that the white flesh of fruits and vegetables may protect against stroke, and previous studies had linked higher consumption of fruits and vegetables in general with lower stroke risk. But this is the first time researchers looked at the color of fruits and vegetables, and it seems to matter. Over a 10-year period, researchers examined the link between color of fruits and vegetables consumed with stroke incidence in a population-based study of 20,000 adults with an average age of 41. Now, they categorized the fruits and vegetables in four color groups: green, including dark leafy vegetables and cabbage and lettuces; orange and yellow, which were mainly citrus fruits; red and purple, which were mostly red vegetables; and white, of which 55% were apples and pears. Well, the study conducted at the university in the Netherlands found that cauliflower, bananas, chicory, cucumbers were also good. Potatoes were not included in the study, but apples and pears are also very high in fiber and a flavonoid called quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And it's believed that it helps arthritis, heart disease, anxiety, depression, fatigue, and asthma. So there was no association found between strokes and green, orange, yellow, red, and purple fruits and vegetables. However, the risk of a stroke was 52% lower for people with a high intake of white fruits and vegetables compared to people with low intake. So the effect of eating white fruits and vegetables was dose-dependent. The more you ate, the lower was your risk. Each 25 grams per day, and that's not even an ounce, 20.35 grams to an ounce, that you were talking about under 1 ounce, was associated with a 9% lower risk. So let's say the average was 120 grams. Still, that's a small amount. You're only talking about a little over 5 ounces there. So get your fruits and vegetables, and now we will discuss how medical science embraced the healing power of aloe. I'm a big advocate of aloe. And the latest on aloe from the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine shows that aloe vera, and I believe in the whole leaf, not just the gel, is able to help with diabetes, arthritis, epilepsy, and asthma. It is also used topically on burns and sunburns, and it's also used to treat psoriasis. The gel inside the aloe vera plant can be spread directly on the skin, and the leaves can be juiced, with the British Journal of General Practice published an article that reviewed aloe vera, and it found evidence that aloe could be useful in the treatment of diabetes, lowering blood glucose levels, and it could also reduce blood fat levels, and it could also help a person get rid of genital herpes and psoriasis quicker. Then an article was published in the Indian Journal of Dermatology. They found that aloe vera has over 75 different active components and very beneficial. So those are just some of the few. So the specific scientific documentation that aloe vera is useful for dermatitis, psoriasis, herpes simplex, virus 2, burns, type 2 diabetes, and preventing cancer. Lots of proof. So let's see if we can't get some of that into our system on a regular basis. Also, I want to share this with our guest, but he's going to be on there in a moment. But let me just provide this. This is from greenmedinfo.com from Sayer G. J.I. It says, the Gates Foundation funds surveillance of anti-vaccine groups. I'll quote this. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation launched the Grand Challenges in Global Health in partnership with the National Institutes of Health in 2003, which, according to their website, is aimed at, quote, creating new tools that can radically improve health in the developing world. Well, so far, they've given 45 grants totaling $458 million to scientists in 30 countries. But where has all the money actually gone? Towards developing and implementing water purification and sanitary systems? Or basic nutrition support aimed at optimizing immune function? How about providing shelter and medical facilities for the homeless? No, none of those. For example, a $100,000 grant was recently dispersed to a Seth Kelecham, professor at the Department of Psychology, University of Connecticut, quote, for establishing an anti-vaccine surveillance and alert system, which intends to, quote, establish an internet-based global monitoring and rapid alert system for finding, analyzing, and counteracting misinformation communication campaigns regarding vaccines in support of global immunization efforts, end quote. We can only wonder what organizations might be labeled as misinformation communication campaigns, considering the fact that Bill Gates, in a February 4, 2011 interview on CNN with Sanjay Gupta, said that, quote, anti-vaccine groups kill children. Here's the full quote, quote, so it's an absolute lie that has killed thousands of kids, because the mothers who heard that lie, many of them didn't have their kids take either pertussis or measles vaccines, and their children are dead today. And so the people go and engage in those anti-vaccine efforts, you know, they kill children. It's a very sad thing, because these vaccines are important, end quote. It's quite possible that any dissenting voice not in support of universal vaccine campaigns may be included in this type of surveillance and alert system as a potentially endangering the lives of others, killing children. What is so ironic about the situation is the Gates Foundation support polio global eradication initiative that has resulted in 47,500 cases of vaccine-induced paralysis in Indian children last year alone, and which is twice as deadly as the wild-type polio it claimed to have put to an end to officially on January 11, 2012. Who here, then, is truly concerned about the health of children? Moreover, it's exceedingly difficult to view Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and this particular effort as a strictly humanitarian foundation, considering many of the projects. So here's one I want to list before we introduce our guest. This is what the mainstream media would refuse to confront Bill Gates on. Oh, did I forget? He's a screamer, isn't he? Yeah. Why don't you listen to some of his employees about how he communicates with them? There was the synthetic lymph nodes. Stephen Meshnick and Carla Handy, University of North Carolina in the U.S., will develop a biocompatible, biodegradable polymer device that can be placed under the skin to introduce vaccines and antigens to the immune system. device will attract immune cells and trigger their proliferation as well as act as an adjuvant at the site of injection. Then there's the needle-free vaccine versus nanoparticle aerosols. There's the plant-produced synthetic RNA vaccines. There's a profitable vaccine distribution in emerging markets. There's the genetically programmed pathogen sense and destroy. There's the vaccine and the salt shaker, a new safe low-cost approach. There's the humanized mouse model to evaluate live attenuated vaccine candidates. And it goes on. He also is one of the major stockholders in Monsanto. And he has also discussed what many of us consider a eugenics plan of putting contraception in vaccines so that those who are poor and hence not socially acceptable will not bear children. Now here's my point of view. I've produced 2 multi-award-winning documentaries. I've written 22 scientific papers on the subject of vaccines. And I ask a basic question. Are vaccines safe and effective? If so, show me the independent science that validates it. Where are your peer review journals with double-blind placebo-controlled trials? Did you have 1,000 children you vaccinated, another 1,000 children you didn't? Follow them for 5 years, regularly check them, get all their blood work up and see which of the two groups has different conditions to either support or challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Never been done. So what a lot of scientists have done is to begin to question long-held assumptions. We've all had this assumption. Vaccines have to be safe and effective because they're mandated, they're everywhere, and they're the major causes of the eradication of disease. Until you realize they weren't the major cause of eradication of disease. In fact, a methodical scholarly examination of the public health records in England, in Wales, in Scotland, and the United States shows that for the vast majority of vaccines, the disease was 95 to 98% gone prior to any vaccine being invented for them. Yet they took 100% of the credit. And yet they were able to get something that the heart medications and the cancer medications and the antipsychotic medications didn't get. Complete protection if their vaccine killed every single person. You can't sue a vaccine maker. And yet we've had a proliferation of illnesses that many see, including a lot of parents I've interviewed, see came right after their mass vaccinations. So we have a terrible policy in this country on vaccines. I blame the medical community. I blame the scientists. I blame the pharmacists. I blame everybody. They're all guilty. Guilty as hell. Why? Because they started off with an assumption, and science should never be about an assumption, that because nobody was actually looking at the details. I just finished interviewing 47 of the world's leading women doctors and scientists, including professors of immunology, and I ask a basic question. Can you state on the record, I was filming them just last week, can you state on the record that being vaccinated with an MMR vaccine will protect you and be safe? She said no. I said, then why aren't they giving this warning to parents? I can't tell you why. All I know is that, and then she went through a very elaborate discussion about what the immune system really is. And I said, did you vaccinate your kids? She said, absolutely not, I wouldn't. Because there's no proof that the vaccines will create the type of protective long-term antibodies that are necessary. I'd rather see natural immunity develop. And she was not alone. Well, why isn't this even being discussed? Why can't we even have a civil discussion? And you cannot have a civil discussion because now we've got medical McCarthyism, where if you speak something, you speak truth to official lies, you're going to be hammered. Now, we're talking in the cesspool of the world right now for political corruption, Washington, D.C., on WPFW. My guest standing by is Dr. David Lewis. I gave you his background. I gave you his information. Now let's welcome him to the program. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Lewis.
Hello, this is David Lewis.
Dr. Lewis, I would like for you to focus your energy and your attention on just one issue. There was a very well-known and highly respected group of physicians, including Dr. Walker Smith and Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who were asked to evaluate some children's intestinal conditions and to see if their various conditions, the state of their conditioning, and what could have been some of the causes. They published an article together and in The Lancet. After that article, they were attacked. Brian Deere attacked them, the Times of London attacked them, the British Medical Journal attacked them. Everybody jumped on. In the United States, Anderson Cooper and Dr. Gupta and just about any other journalist attacked them personally. Tell us about this story and what you as a whistleblower came to find out about the truth of their claims concerning the mRNA vaccine.
Well, as a research microbiologist who works with the National Whistleblowers Center in Washington, D.C., I took interest in this case because I am interested in general where scientists who publish unpopular results come under attack like Dr. Wakefield did. So in his case, I went back to the original documentation that is contained in all of his personal files that he brought with him from the UK, when he came to the United States. So I basically compared those original documents, which were the background documents to the General Medical Council hearings regarding the Lancet study that you described, compared those documents with the General Medical Council's findings, in which they found Dr. Wakefield and his senior co-author, John Walker Smith, guilty of professional misconduct. And what I found, in a nutshell, was that the findings of the General Medical Council bore no resemblance whatsoever to what the documents themselves showed. The documents being those documents involved with the ethics approvals obtained by the authors, the way that the experiments were done, in which it was concluded by Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors that there was a form of mild inflammation present in the biopsies taken from the 12 Lancet children. At least 11 of the 12 showed some evidence of mild colitis. It was the observation by the parents, some of the parents, that some of the children's problems, their GI problems, coincided with the onset of autism, the regression toward autism in their children, which coincided with the vaccination with the MMR vaccine. So it was that association made by the parents and some of the primary care physicians who treated the patients before Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors investigated their cases that raised all of the ruckus and caused all of the attacks, precipitated attacks on Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors.
What have you found from your conclusions about the people attacking Wakefield and the others, and what does this tell us about the state of the politicalization of science in the United States and around the world?
Well, what I did was take selected documents from Dr. Wakefield's files that clearly contradicted what Brian Deere, the reporter, Fiona Godley, the editor-in-chief of the British Medical Journal, and some of her co-editors were claiming that Dr. Wakefield had done. the documents that proved those claims were absolutely false, and I submitted them to Dr. Godley, and accompanied those documents with a commentary in which I explained in detail how those documents proved that their allegations against Dr. Wakefield were not true. And it was in the course of my interactions with Dr. Godley that I learned firsthand how Brian Deere and Dr. Godley and others at the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, were handling the evidence in Dr. Wakefield's case. In fact, when Dr. Godley rejected my commentary and invited me instead to simply submit a short, rapid response, I interacted with the editors on the publication of a shortened version of my material. In the course of doing that, Brian Deere himself personally became engaged and filed false allegations of ethical misconduct against me with the National Whistleblower Center and compelled the National Whistleblower Center to take down the documents that I had posted there that exonerated Dr. Wakefield. The National Whistleblower Center took them down simply because it doesn't have the resources to defend against possible threats of lawsuits over something like that. We have no funding to do this kind of work. I did it on my own personal time. But I learned firsthand that Brian Deere would make false allegations of ethical misconduct, as he did against me, without ever asking for the facts up front. So that, to me, was an insight into what was going on with Brian Deere. Similarly, when I forwarded Brian Deere's false allegations against me to Fiona Godley and asked that she deal with this problem, it only got worse from there. Dr. Godley and the other editors and the lawyers working for the British Medical Journal ended up taking only selected documents that I'd provided them around which they could build a new fraud allegation against Wakefield and others. And they didn't even mention, they published two commentaries, a feature article by Brian Deere, and Dr. Godley ran an editorial to go with my little rapid response. And in all of that, they misrepresented my credentials as a research microbiologist. They cherry-picked the evidence that I sent to them and published only very select documents and ignored most all of the evidence that exonerated Dr. Wakefield.
I just filmed Dr. Wakefield, and I just spoke with him concerning how Dr. Walker Smith appealed and won and was completely, unequivocally exonerated of all charges against him. And Dr. Wakefield said he could not have afforded the appeal at that time, and therefore he had to withstand the slings and arrows of the scientific and medical and journalistic communities against him. What concerned me was that here we have people with impeccable reputations who have no financial or other agenda, who are simply looking for the truth, and they found the truth, but that truth happened to have had an ugly reality. That those individuals who had taken what was considered a defective lot of the MMR vaccine had a higher incidence of inflammation in their intestines. some of the parents, but not Dr. Wakefield, said that their kids were normal until they got the MMR vaccine. Then they regressed into various states of, I think, eight of the parents said their children regressed into some state of autism. This was all denied. Think of the United States, how many parents have been disempowered by having a completely healthy and normal child or a teenager with Gardasil. 126 deaths now, 26,000 adverse events reported to the FDA, and yet no proof that it reverses or prevents cervical cancer, and they continue to promote it as the answer to prevent surgical cancer, cervical cancer. I'm just appalled at our scientific community's lack of honesty and looking for the truth, in our medical community for looking for the truth. But everybody lines up. The state legislators line up to mandate, they're doing that in New Jersey right now, to mandate that every kid has to get this Gardasil vaccine. So one day you wake up and you realize your kid's going to get a whole lot of vaccines before the age of six. You're assuming they're safe and effective, or we wouldn't have a national policy doing it. That many people couldn't be that ignorant. And then your kid's the one that gets the disease that they were vaccinated for, or gets sick, or dies. And who do you go to? Who's going to listen to you? The government? Doesn't care. Big Pharma? It's not interested. The media? No. Only some parent groups that, you know, are joined together, like Barbara Fisher. I just think it's a sad state of affairs, but I think it tells us a lot about the difference between official, real science, real healing at the medical level, and real care at the national and state levels. Your final thoughts on this, please.
We actually have a huge problem with science and the peer-reviewed scientific journals now that has reached a crisis. Any issue, vaccine safety is an excellent example in a worst-case scenario of the problem. The reality is that today, science, whenever government or industry has a stake in it, it pretty much, together, they pretty much control the scientific literature. That is, they manipulate it to support government government policies and industry practices. And the way it's done is government agencies in the United States and Great Britain and elsewhere, they fund, using public money, they fund scientists at universities to publish research papers that support government policies. Government scientists, and I worked for EPA's U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Research and Development for 31 years as a senior research microbiologist, until I published two papers in the journal Nature that were critical of EPA policies. That is, they didn't support EPA policies, and I was out of a job after that in 2003. Still unemployed as a scientist today. This is what happens. The government hires, no matter what government it is, hires scientists to support its policies. If they don't, they lose their jobs. Universities throughout academia are funded by government and industry. If they get funds from the government to produce research studies, those studies will support that government agency's policies, or else that funding will be cut off. The same with industry. Everyone knows that you can't work for a pharmaceutical company and not produce information that supports the safety and efficacy of vaccines or other pharmaceutical products. You'll lose your job if you don't. If you work at a university and you publish data that is critical of certain government policies and industry practices, you will be out of a job. You will be discredited. What happened to Andrew Wakefield, what happened to many scientists, has been a growing problem where scientists who are critical of government policies or industry practices are taken out of the system right away. So all we have left now for any area of science that government and industry has a big stake in are scientists working for government and universities, government agencies and universities, who are producing scientific articles supportive of government and industry. If they don't, they're out of a job. So that's the bottom line. We've got to fix this situation.
Is it not the case that the Food and Drug Administration, clear up to FDA Commissioner Hamburg, who was a major, major player in Big Pharma, were caught downloading 21,000 emails, private emails, of their scientists, physicians, journalists, even a member of Congress, their own advocate, top lawyer, because these people were concerned about some radiological and pharmaceutical problems and that they felt that dangerous or not properly tested medical devices were going onto the market, so they were showing their concerns. So these people had their messages tapped into by an operation that was brought in from outside. And I'm thinking, why aren't these people being arrested? Why aren't they being indicted? Why isn't there a grand jury by our attorney general? Because anywhere else in America, if you went into someone's private emails and you downloaded them in a way that they were not aware of, that's a crime. That's a felony. I've spoken with constitutional lawyers on this. Why is it that we are not making this an issue? Why hasn't the Washington Post and others not made this an issue? How does that make any other conscientious, concerned scientist at the FDA or any other agency feel? Because then you look around, if you work at the EPA or if you work at the USDA, you work at National Institutes of Health, and you see that, gee whiz, they've been watching, they've been reading their emails, they know all their communications from their private accounts. Well, then what's that mean? Is someone watching us? What do you think that does to people?
Well, I know what it does to solid scientists working for the government. They leave. They have been leaving since the beginning of the Clinton administration in 1993. Scientists have left the Centers for Disease Control in droves. Scientists have left the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. It is a problem that is pervasive, that has reached out to the mainstream media. It's reached out to members of Congress. I've experienced this firsthand. I've wrangled with the FDA myself in Rockville, Maryland, over issues. And it's not a conspiracy, as those who attack Wakefield and others say it is, that those who support Wakefield believe in some great conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. It's simply the fact that throughout government and academia, most people working now for government agencies and universities care much more about protecting their own careers than they do the public health. It's as simple as that.
Okay, well, I appreciate your courage in speaking out. You're certainly there to protect the American public and to remind science that it can only serve the public interest if it maintains some level of integrity. Thank you very much, Dr. David Lewis, for being on today and sharing your insights.
Thank you, Gary. I enjoyed it.
I'm Gary Knoll. And that's the conclusion of our regular guest program. And now let's go into our WPFW Central and say hello to Tiffany. Hi, Tiffany.
Hello, Gary.
How's everything today?
Everything is wonderful.
Good. We want to thank all of you who called in yesterday to get your Cocoa Magic bars. It was a lot of people, and a lot of new listeners. And we broke a record, by the way, the day before, from what I understand, from new listeners.
Yes, we did.
Had eight of them in one show. So thank you. And today, we're going to change gears a bit. Would you tell us what we're going to offer today, please?
We're offering War on Health, which is a wonderful documentary produced, written, and directed by you. And it's available for a pledge of $100.
Let me explain this documentary. I've done over 100 documentaries. Some of the people in this audience will remember the drugging of our children. They'll remember Vaccine Nation, Autism Made in the USA, Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own, AIDS Inc. Why would you want to call this station now and support a documentary entitled War on Health, The Tyranny of the FDA? Here's why. Because right now, the American public is at risk of being overly diagnosed, overtreated, mistreated, wrong drugs, wrong combination of drugs, dangerous drugs, unapproved drugs, drugs that shouldn't be used, and certainly the approach should not be the first approach for 88% of all medicine. Five scholars, medical doctors, professors, myself, spent 5 years doing research to ask a basic question. Does American medicine work? We're told it works. It's the best in the world. Well, if it is, then why do we have so many people having adverse effects? What we found is about 12% is exemplary. Emergency medicine is great, but the rest of it is terrible. But no one is changing it. Even the Journal of the American Medical Association wrote an article showing that iatrogenesis, or medically induced injury, was the third leading cause of death in the United States. They were wrong. It is the number one cause. They did not include all the statistics. They didn't include people dying from bed sores, 88,000. Infections that you get when you go into a hospital, 110,000 last year. Malnutrition that you get when you go into a hospital and eat that crap they call hospital food, that's 50,000 a year. Think of that. We kill almost as many Americans each year eating hospital food that all 10 years the American casualties in Vietnam. Who would have thought that going into a hospital would be as dangerous as going to Vietnam? We have drugs that not only don't work and have no legitimate science behind them, it's all proprietary science. And we have an organization that is there to protect the interests of the pharmaceutical industry. That's why you have so many bad drugs that are on the market and then hurt people. Oh, did I forget? Vioxx is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It turns off pain in people with arthritis. And it actually worked. Trouble is, it killed anywhere from 60 to 500,000. Mm. They paid a $5.85 billion fine. They didn't have to have it mandated withdrawn from the market. And the head of the company got a bonus. Only in America could you kill 60,000 innocent Americans and get a raise. It's just obscene. So I just thought it was time to do a smackdown. You know, people were afraid of the FDA because, as we've seen from their recent illegal activities, which went clear up to the top of the agency, they'll stop at nothing to stop any critics. So I just took them on. I just, you know, that's it. I'm from West Virginia. You know, if you do enough bad stuff, you're going to get called out on it. You're not going to like how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I went after them. Isn't it interesting, Tiffany, that the people in my film were the people, and only those people, were the people the FDA engaged in this illegal computer hacking.
Wow.
Yeah, and the journalists were the journalists I interviewed. And the lawyers were the lawyers I interviewed. Gee whiz. And so what we have is we have a responsibility today. Everyone in this WPFW audience, I believe, in first keeping yourself healthy, but if you're not healthy and need medical attention, at least know what part of medicine works and what part doesn't and why. We should know about the kind of drugs, the statin drugs and the blood pressure lowering medication. They'll take you to take an aspirin. I just debated a board certified professor of cardiology just 3 weeks ago on this subject in New York. He said, well, you know, for people who have just slightly elevated, you know, blood pressure, they should play it safe. Take a blood thinner. What kind? Aspirin. Why? Well, because the literature shows aspirin reduces stroke. I said yes, and it shows that it increases heart attack. How's that? Well, aspirin destroys vitamin C, B6, B12, folic acid, the four nutrients you need to lower your risk of homocysteine. Elevated homocysteine, this inflammatory marker in the body, and it goes up, your risk of a heart attack, a stroke, and cancer increase exponentially. So we find out, also, what about the 24,000 people that died last year by taking aspirins and other irritants to the stomach that cause intestinal bleeding, gastrointestinal bleeding? So, yeah, you're half right, but you're half wrong, and that half wrong is deadly. And also, if you're a board-certified cardiologist and professor of cardiology, you sure have enough knowledge to know how to look in the literature. You would see that a glass of green juice, some garlic, onion, vitamin C, vitamin E, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, NADH, all naturally thin the blood with no side effects except oxidation of the tissue and protection of the epithelial tissue, the lining of the arteries. Well, you know, you're right. I don't want to really say this out loud, but I take the omega-3 fatty acids, and I take coenzyme Q10, and I take vitamin C every day. Well, then why wouldn't you offer it to your patients? Well, you know, kind of go along to get along. Yeah, but what if going along causes your patient to get a bleeding ulcer and they die? It's real. People die. Tens of thousands a year. Since when is 24,000 people dying a year acceptable? To protect the interests of people advertised on television? Yeah. So how does all this happen? How do we end up having death from medicine as the number one cause, exceeding heart attacks, exceeding strokes, exceeding cancer, and exceeding diabetes every year for the last 20 years? This year, there was just a study out last week, Tiffany, showing that, strep throat, you know, where a staph infection in your throat, you know, when people get staph, mm-hmm. they take antibiotics. Right. It doesn't work because it's viral, not bacterial. Mm-hmm. As a result, it destroys the immune system, causing a proliferation of additional bad bacteria. This goes on all the time. There's just no adult in the house willing to stop this madness and say, enough. And the adult that we're supposed to have protecting us is the FDA. But what is the FDA doing? You'll see in the film, they're with 40-man SWAT team, they're raiding an Amish farmer for creating some organic unpasteurized milk. That's in a national emergency. Heaven help us if an Amish farmer creates a quart of milk that hasn't been pasteurized. That guy deserves to get shot, doesn't he? Well, they had arms drawn when they went to arrest him. But killing 700,000 Americans with patented drugs, that we give a pass on. Don't even look there. This is the stupidity. So having this film could save your life because everyone's going to need medical care. We're not against medical care. We're against bad medicine.
Right.
And the people who are responsible for this is the Food and Drug Administration. So we need to get on this. This is the film. I just premiered it for our sister station, KPFK in Los Angeles, about 4 weeks ago. I premiered in New York at the Ethical Culture Center. 1,000 people were there.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's time for the people in the WPFW audience to watch this film. It is powerful. Show it to your friends. Get people together to watch it, because the choice that you will make, whether you have a headache medication or a sleeping medication or urinary incontinence medication, haven't you heard? Surely, Tiffany, everyone's heard the take the sleep medication and it could end up causing drowning. Don't drive for the next day or two. And, it could lead to a stroke or a heart attack and deaths have been reported. And you think, why in the heck would I take medication to get a better night's sleep and die?
Truly.
So, and look at all the 25% of all American women taking antipsychotic medication. They're not psychotic. And yet suicide is way up, because suicide is a side effect. So once and for all, we take on the FDA. Joseph Marcola, Dr. Marcola, Dr. Joanne Whitaker, Mike Adams, the Health Natural News, Bill Falloon of Life Extension have said this is the single most important film on health that's come out in the United States. So we need to watch this film. We need to get this film. This is one of those films that is so powerful, so telling of the truth, that we need to see it for A, so we can prevent conditions in ourselves. B, we'll know what not to start doing that could end up causing us to be one of these friendly fire casualties that no one pays attention to, and that what we need to do to change how the FDA is fully 100% controlled from the top down by the pharmaceutical industry. It should be our FDA, not their FDA. And it's been their FDA for decades. It's just time that we stop this. It was time that we saw the truth. And this is a powerful, powerful story. The top lawyer in the United States who's won more cases against the FDA than anyone else, he is in the film talking about how bad drugs get onto the shelves and how you take them not knowing they're bad or ineffective or both. So the film is called The War on Health, and it shows you why they're against genetic engineered food. They want you. They're for genetic engineered food. They don't want you eating organic. They don't want you taking your vitamins. They're raiding vitamin companies. They're trying to mandate that no vitamin could be taken into your body that had been formulated after the 1990s, which is 99% of all vitamins. So if the FDA gets its way this year, you won't have any vitamins you can take. None. Zero. Unless it was some tiny little 1 milligram that they would approve because some pharmaceutical company also makes it. But all the important vitamins, all the good ones, coenzyme Q10, and acetylcholine, the really superstars, you wouldn't be able to get them. This is another part of their attack. So when you call WPFW right now and say, yes, I want to watch this, I'm prepared for this, then you'll see how important it is. So that's it. That's the War on Health. And I wish that if we had a way of playing it, you could play some of it, but I understand we don't have that. So they'll just have to get it and watch it, and then I can promise you, you will not be able to watch this film without feeling enormous concern for our healthcare system and why it's failed. But I'll tell you who hasn't failed. I'll tell you who is brilliant. Brilliant. Kudos to them. They're so smart. The lobbyists, the consultants, the pharmaceutical reps, the members of Congress that leave the FDA and go to work for Big Pharma, the members of the House and the Senate who leave and go to work for Big Pharma, the people in Washington who have rigged the system, they're doing great. So they win, we lose. But when we lose, we die. We take drugs, we die. And do you know how many deaths there are in the last 20 years? It's anywhere between 8 to 10 million Americans died who didn't have to. That's genocide. And yet not a word, not a breath by anyone in Congress is going to criticize. Oh, a few. Dennis Kucinich is in the film. Ralph Nader's in the film. The people who have always cared about us before profits are in the film. But no one is in the film from making the money, the insurance industries, the for-profit hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies, they're all about profit, and they control everything. It's their town. They own it. I was going to say to my guest, why are you even bothering with this? Why don't we just accept that all of Washington is owned by someone and not the people, and just turn it over to them? No longer call them the FDA or the IRS or the Federal Reserve. Just call it the Boys Club. You know, the rich white boys club. How about that for the Federal Reserve? And then dispense with all criticisms of it. This way, none of us can criticize because we're not demonstrating against them. We're not stopping them. We're not voting them out of office. We're not boycotting their products. So why be angry anymore? Why don't we just accept that it's Washington, Inc., you know, the best city in America, the corporations bought. Therefore, they own it. They own the Washington Post. They own all this. So, and then you hear a voice saying, well, hold on a second. I don't want to give them my city. I don't want to give them the rights over me and my life. You think, okay, well, maybe it's not a good idea to turn it all over to them. They already own Wall Street. They own the governors and the rest of these little cretins. So why don't we fight back? Well, what tools do you have? Well, now you got a tool. There's never been a documentary as devastatingly honest that shows you the truth on any governmental agency as this one does. The War on Health is so intimate. It is so timely. It is so essential. It is so needed that even in the doldrums of a person looking for anything to distract themselves, they watch these idiot television programs and reality shows that show the worst of human nature. It's just time that we get a little angry. Anger is good. Outrage is better. Rage is destructive. I don't believe in rage. It is counterintuitive, counterproductive. But anger awakens us. Outrage solidifies our desire to see positive change. This film will create both anger and outrage in you. And it's time that we awaken. So, the first really hard-hitting film for people in the PFW audience. I've been away for a while. I'm back. I'm happy to be back. And so now let's give a call to the station. Tiffany, over to you.
All right. The number to call is 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739 or toll free 1-800-222-9739. We are offering the documentary War on Health, the FDA's Cult of Tyranny. It is written and directed by Gary Nall, available for a pledge of $100. And it takes on the FDA. And, you know, I've heard this topic before where it talks about holistic approaches to curing people is going to go away in place of the prescription drugs. And that really is a scary thought. And so you definitely want to get educated by watching this particular documentary.
It's an education, Tiffany, but it's one that you better pay attention to, because everyone in this audience, without fail, is going to have someone that they're going to recommend medical treatment to sooner or later. When you realize how many Americans die from thirst, they dehydrate or starvation in nursing homes, you think, well, how's that possible? They have staffs. These are not cheap. Surely someone is aware that they haven't had enough to eat or drink? And the answer is wrong. They do. They just keep them sedated so they don't ask for anything. When you look at how many Americans are over 47, it's 96 million. That's 96 million people who are the majority going to be a part of the medical industrial complex. Did you ever watch the movie Soylent Green?
I did. Years ago.
Edward G. Robinson?
Yeah, I think I saw it on TV.
Yeah, where you have this kind of broken down city, and Charlton Heston plays the good cop, and Edward G. Robinson, I think he was called the Book because he knew everything and would look up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, Edward G. Robinson has had enough of everything, and he goes to this place where people go in, and they're put on a sheet, and they lay down, and then they're allowed to watch scenes from nature that they haven't seen since childhood, because all that's gone. And then they're euthanized, and then their body disappears, and that's it, except Charlton Heston sneaks in, sees that they're made into a food
right.
that are fed to the public called Soylent Green.
Yeah.
We right now in the United States, we only see people who are sick as an income stream. Now, there are individual physicians or nurses who are otherwise concerned and conscientious and compassionate, but the system itself is based purely upon get a person on meds and keep them as long as you can. When you can no longer keep them on that, change the diagnosis, get them on a different med.
Mm-hmm.
The system is broken, corrupted beyond repair. But it's the most expensive system in the world. $2.9 trillion this year they're going to make, almost $3 trillion. And what do we get? We have one of the worst healthcare profiles in the world. In the world. You could live a longer and healthier life in most of the other countries of the world than the United States, at least the developed countries. And that shouldn't be, because we're spending so much. But we have a health care plan that doesn't do anything for health. That's the amazing thing. And people don't realize how many people die because of the treatment they get. So the more people are treated, the more people are going to get sick, die, or have injury. It's number one cause of death, number one cause of injury. So I published the results in an article, and I submitted it to every single journalist in America I could find, 7,000, every medical journal, every scientific journal, every member of Congress, every one of the 50 state legislators got a copy of Death by Medicine. Not a single person responded. I only used their statistics, their statements, except no one had ever collected and put them all together to show how bad the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
So Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, said a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So what we don't want to face, what truths we're not willing to look at, we look the other way. We'll distract ourselves. So we've just gone through 30 years of distraction. It's time that we awaken on all levels, from the reality of global warming to how Citizens United has bought our government, that our elections are farces, they're just lotteries, that there is no two-party system. There's only the corporate party that controls both branches, Democrats and Republicans, that those who challenge any of this are marginalized. Well, it's time that we saw the truth so we could act on it. When you call the station right now and ask for the war on health, you're going to see the truth in its entirety. Give a call now. Tiffany?
All right. The number to call, 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. Again, the thank you gift today is called War on Health. It's a documentary written and directed by Gary Nall, the FDA's Cult of Tyranny. And just to give you a little information about it, it says it's featuring many pioneering American and European attorneys, physicians, medical researchers, and advocates of health freedom. War on Health lifts the veil on FDA's militaristic operations against organic food providers and alternative physicians. Very, very compelling documentary, and can be yours for a pledge of $100. Now, we do have some people we want to say thank you to. We want to welcome a new anonymous member to the family out of Fort Washington, Maryland. Looking for the bell. They took it, so ding, ding, ding. And we want to say thank you to another new anonymous member out of New Carrollton, Maryland. Thank you so much for joining the WPFW family. Thank you to Gray out of Bethesda, Maryland, renewing support. We appreciate you. And we want to say thank you to Gary. I'm sorry, that was Greg. And thank you to Gary out of Baltimore, Maryland, renewing support. And you can, too, by calling 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739 or toll free 1-800-222-9739. Again, we're offering the gift War on Health, the FDA's Cult of Tyranny, available for a tax deductible pledge of $100. Great way to support the station and support Gary Nall. Gary?
Most importantly, they're supporting themselves. Anytime that you're empowered by information that could change how you would approach a condition, that makes all the difference in the world. And that's one of the things I've gotten as feedback from the film, is people saying, gee whiz, I didn't know any of this stuff. I had nurses, physicians, professors come to the showing. I've had, Woodstock, upstate New York, well, 2 months ago I had a showing there, and it was the largest outpouring at their Woodstock Community Center in the city's history.
Mm.
So many people were packed into the center that 200 people were left outside. So while the show was starting, I went outside and did a lecture.
Oh,
I lectured
wow.
to them for 2 hours outside while the show was playing inside. And we're getting people from all walks of life who want to know this information.
Mm-hmm.
Out in Long Island at Huntington Arts Cinema, it was packed. And that's a professional group out there. That's near Cold Springs Harbor. So you get a lot of scientists and academics. And everybody says the same thing, because we had our camera crew there. As people come out, ask him, would you make a statement about the film? And you'll see all these people just saying, I didn't know any of this. I'm embarrassed. One man said, I'm a professor here at the university. I'm embarrassed that I didn't know any of this material, because this is just essential that we know this.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody has a story. Everybody has a story about someone they know who went in for a simple procedure, and something happened, and something went wrong, and they got the wrong medication, or they had complications or an infection, and died.
Yeah.
And I put that in there as well. That's in the film. And why does this happen? Why? If you're spending $3 trillion, you should have exemplary medical care. But you don't. Why don't you? So I dissect the whole medical industrial complex. And then I show you the politicians they hire. And then these politicians go in and say, well, let's make sure that the government cannot, for the VA, for Medicaid and Medicare, cannot find a better, cheaper drug. Well, so then what I did was, I took the top 10 selling pharmaceutical drugs in the United States. The antidepressants, the anti-gastric distress ones, all anti-pain ones. And then I found, what is the cost of a 30-day supply for a generic equal drug? Do you know, Tiffany, that in some cases there was a 200,000 to 300,000% increase of the product that you and I and anybody else is paying for versus its generic equivalent that we're not allowed to get? I'm not talking about two or three times. For example, we found a drug that cost 12 cents a bottle for 30-month supply, and it was selling for $250 a bottle. Do the math. And that shows you how much profit. And they wrote, the pharmaceutical industry itself wrote the legislation that became this Medicare Act, that the legislators were given 1,300 pages on the day it was supposed to have been voted on, and they never read it. So once again, they're making into law something they never read. Since when do we allow this? We should be outraged that members of Congress are allowing private industries to write laws. Oh, I forgot. They do that all the time. In fact, rarely does Congress ever do anything unless there's a financial incentive or career incentive to do it. And then they sit down with people who are lobbyists who come in and write the legislation or change the legislation to benefit them. It's just, it's so sick. Well, I just took on one agency, that's it, the FDA, one issue, American Health, and I did one documentary. It's called The War on Health. So I want people to call the station, get a copy. It can save your life.
All right. And joining me is Bobby Hill, our interim program director. And we want to say the number to call is 202-588-9739. Or Bobby?
1-800-222-9739. Good afternoon, Gary. Good afternoon.
Hi.
To the wonderful listeners out there enjoying your program this afternoon. The Gary Knowles Show, Monday through Friday from 3 until 4. And like yesterday, we had an opportunity to get an extended conversation. Interesting conversation, and certainly one that some of our listeners have responded to. I'd like to thank Adrian from Brownsville, Maryland, I believe. Took advantage of the War on Health gift, the DVD. You will enjoy that. You have anybody, Tiffany?
Yes, I do. I want to say thank you to Eddie Coleman out of Fort Washington, Maryland. He's renewing support. We want to thank an anonymous caller out of Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you so much for renewing support. And we want to say thank you to Sandra from Stafford, who is renewing support and all taking advantage of the War on Health documentary being offered today. You can, too, by calling 202-588-9739 or toll-free
at 1-800-222-9739. You can also pledge online at www.wpfw.org. We're going to continue to offer this wonderful gift throughout the evening. So when you call our phone answers, just specify the War on Health, and the copies that can be made available to you, or your copy can be made available to you, I should say. And remember that as you move into the evening jazz programming and the wonderful jazz that Hassan normally shares. Hassan won't be with us today. I'll be sharing the music up until 6 o'clock. and we look forward to Hassan's return. But we're going to keep the music in the same vibe that Hassan generally brings it to you. Very professional, very warm, very feeling and swinging music. So while we listen very shortly to Hassan's Evening Jazz, continue to go to the phones, continue to think about this conversation and the wonderful gift that Gary Null is offering, War on Health. Our gift to you for your support of WPFW at the level of $100. 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739. Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you, Gary. Look forward to hearing you tomorrow.
Thank you.